Hello and welcome to the 2018 Fremantle Press podcast series. My name is Claire Miller and I'm here with Julie Sprigg, who is one of six shortlisted writers for the 2018 City of Fremantle TAG Hungerford Award. Julie is in the running to receive a $12,000 cash prize from the City of Fremantle and a publishing contract with Fremantle Press. Julie Sprigg, welcome.
Hi, Claire. Thanks for having me.
Julie, you've written a work of narrative non-fiction called Chewing Porridge. Why porridge and why chew it?
Well, the title comes from a proverb in Ethiopia where the book is set. So the proverb translates as a person who has too much will begin to do useless things like chew on porridge. So that sums up the narrator's experiences within the memoir, but it also sums up the fact that the narrator has way too much idealism and way too much zeal and then starts to do very useless things like turn herself inside out with worry.
This week we've been really pleased to have Jay Martin in town. She's been launching her book Vodka and Apple Juice, which won the 2016 City of Fremantle TAG Hungerford Award. And her narrator does turn herself inside out with worry. She's a little bit of a naive Australian. Can you relate to that?
So I can definitely identify with that. There are definite similarities, but there's also some crucial differences. So the most significant is that this manuscript is a coming-of-age story. It's about a narrator who wants to make the world a better place, but comes to an understanding of how brutal the world is and how brutal those forces are that stop the world from being a good place already. So this narrative plays out much more strongly than the shock of meeting different cultural identities.
And so speaking of shocks, where were you when you found out you'd been shortlisted? Take us back to that moment.
I was actually in the car on my way to a family holiday in the small town of Boyartbrook, which is a town that appears in my manuscript. So we were almost out of mobile range, so we had to pull the car over, and I took the call beneath some beautiful big gum trees next to a paddock of sheep, and there was a field of yellow canola flowers, so it was quite picturesque. But then in the back seat I had a grizzling toddler and a 10-year-old. So I was so excited to find out I'd been nominated for the shortlist. And there was a little bit of cheering, a little bit of weeping. And I think the 10-year-old summed it up best. He said, "Does this mean you're going to get a gold sticker on the front of your book?"
And it's true, you do.
Yeah. But even if I don't get the gold sticker, even being nominated for the gold sticker is just a huge metaphorical gold sticker on its own. It's real validation for the amount of time and effort that I put into writing this manuscript. So I spent so many hours just locked away with my laptop and my inner critic telling me this was a complete waste of time, nobody's ever going to read a book about physiotherapy in Ethiopia. And to have a panel of judges declare that the book is not only readable, but possibly worthy of a prize is really the ultimate validation. So I feel really honoured.
We've asked you to give us a sneak preview from the manuscript. It's actually a very challenging scene that we've asked you to read. It's about one of your patients with seemingly severe disabilities and how he responded to your treatment.
To walk. The next morning's patient was already there when I got to work. I sat next to him where he lay on the thick vinyl mat on the floor. Yeshi slipped off her mules and sat cross-legged next to me, arranging her long skirt over her bare legs. The other 10 workers formed a circle around us. Hiname Emmanuel, 4 years old, Yeshi translated from the boy's mother, who perched on the edge of a chair. I tried hard not to look surprised. This 4-year-old was the size of an 18-month-old back home, with an enlarged head and emaciated, flaccid limbs. He didn't look at me when I picked him up, instead his eyes glazed. He wore no nappy, only a shirt I guessed had once been white but was now brown and stiff with dirt and urine. When I picked him up to sit on my lap, the shirt lifted to reveal a tiny, withered body with legs dangling from soft hips. His mother's outfit was speckled with holes and the neckline of her shirt had disintegrated and split in two. The skin on her face and hands was dirty, dry and cracked. The child and his mother smelt of rotten vegetables, and while they explained their situation, I pretended to scratch under my nose to block the smell for fear that I might vomit. Yeshi translated that Emmanuel had spent the first 4 years of his life tied to his mother's back whenever she was at home or walking somewhere. She always tied him to look over her right shoulder. Now I saw how the muscles on one side of his back had shortened and stiffened, which had caused a lopsided curve in his spine. "Has she ever taken him for physio?" I asked. Yeshi translated, "Never. There is no place for physiotherapy, just to come to small projects like this one." I asked if the boy ever lay on his tummy. Not ever lying on stomach, only lying on back. When she wanting for resting her back, she's lying him on the bed. Yes, she translated from the mother and then asked me, do you think he'll learn to walk? 10 rehabilitation workers peered in to hear my answer. Having never seen a child in such a state before, I was overwhelmed and didn't know how to answer. Instead, I said, let's do an assessment and discuss what we find. I tried standard pediatric physio assessments and saw that when I rattled a toy in front of him, he wasn't able to focus his eyes on it. He couldn't turn his head to follow the toy when I shook it at the side. Although old enough to be a preschooler, he had the development skills of a very young baby. When I put him on his tummy, he lay there motionless, not making a sound. As I picked him up, a trickle of his urine went onto the treatment mat. Yikata, yikata, excuse me, excuse me. His mum dabbed at the puddle with his tiny knitted hat. No matter, Yeshi said in English, and repeated the message to his mum in Amharic. When I sat Emmanuel on my knee, his head sunk as if too heavy for his little body. As his head lolled to one side, saliva dripped from the corner of his mouth. His mum dabbed at it with the hat, the same hat she had later put on his head when it was time to go. I was appalled, but taking my cue from the workers who mentioned nothing to the mum, I too kept quiet. Therapy for a child with this degree of disability would be a challenge anywhere, but here it seemed impossible. My first thought was that he should receive a wheelchair so his mum needn't carry him everywhere. Does anyone use a wheelchair here? I asked Yeshi. She replied, it is difficult. Who could push a wheelchair up these roads? The roads in this mountain clinic were so rocky and on such impossible gradients that a wheelchair would be of little use. I put the idea of a wheelchair aside and showed his mum some exercises. She said they would come again the next day. Emmanuel's mum brought him in for treatment again the next day and every day that week. By the Thursday of the second week, he focused his eyes on a rattle when I shook it above him and began to be more responsive. It was a good sign. Developing control of the eyes is the first developmental stage. As I waved goodbye to Emmanuel, who looked snug, tied to his mother's back, I wondered, if he could develop control of his eyes within a week, what other improvements might he make?
Oh, and hopefully we'll all find out when we read the rest of the manuscript and book. That was Julie Sprigg reading an extract from her manuscript, Chewing Porridge, Fixing Up and Breaking Down in Ethiopia. To meet Julie and all the shortlisted writers, please join us at Fremantle Arts Centre on Thursday the 15th of November for the announcement of the winner of the City of Fremantle TAG Hungerford Award. Tickets are free and available from our website, fremantlepress.com.au. Julie, thank you so much for talking to us today.
Thanks for having me.